Hi, welcome to Conversations in Clean from Amphora Solutions. I'm Simon Coles, and with me is Catherine Daly. In this episode, we'll be talking with Caitlin Walker. Caitlin, hello.
Hello.
What's going on?
Well, we've just unexpectedly, I mean, we had this podcast planned, and unexpectedly, I was given an opportunity to go and do some live clean scoping, and Catherine's come along with me, and so we thought, let's switch the original material and let's talk about what's just happened, which is clean scoping with a new client.
So just before we dive in then, what's clean scoping?
So clean scoping is a term that I used to describe what I do when I very, very first meet a client, before we go in and facilitate cleanly the group and teach them systemic modelling or use systemic modelling to solve a problem. So clean scoping is the kinds of behaviours and activities that go on when I'm trying to work out what would the client like to have happen and whether I think that this approach will be useful, acceptable for that client. So it's partly me scoping their needs, but also me deciding whether or not I'd like to work with them.
So just to refresh my memory then, the many, many years ago that we first met, did you do clean scoping on me and what?
Yes. So on that first telephone call, mm-hmm. I was stood in the room behind me.
Yeah.
You were down in Oxfordshire.
Yeah.
And I'm listening to what you've got to say, what you'd like to have happen. I'm listening to the way that you're talking about it, the way that you're talking about your staff. And so as I listen, I'm coding, referring back to our last podcast, I'm coding not just what you'd like, but also your attitude to the people involved. Okay. And I'm working out, what do I need to do with you? What could I do with them? And I'm holding it all very lightly so that I then, when I meet them, I work out whether what you thought needed to have happened actually is what needs to happen.
And when you're holding it really lightly, what would I be seeing or hearing when you're holding it really lightly?
Do you know, I'm not sure what you'd see or hear. I don't know that you could tell the difference, because what I'll be doing is listening to what you say, accepting it. If you're speaking in inference, I'll be asking, oh, so when they're not engaged, what do you see or hear that lets you know they're not engaged? So I'm not challenging you, just accepting it. That's the inference. What's the evidence? I'll always be asking for impact. So when they're not engaged, and you know that they're not engaged because they come in just before they have to start and they leave bang on the minute that their day ends, for you that's they're not engaged. And what's the impact? Oh, well, I don't trust them. I don't want to grow the company with them in it like that. Okay. So I'm holding it lightly. I'm going, okay, this is what they've seen and heard. They call it this. That's the impact for them. But that's not necessarily the truth. It's just their perception at this moment. So I don't think it's still going to be true when we've done a bit of work. And my allegiance is to information gathering, not to whatever the person says they want.
So I guess because it's your first interaction with a group, you don't know what's true or what isn't. You're just getting information, because it could be the people you're talking to, well, they're talking from their own perspective.
Yeah, I mean, even the idea of truth. What I'm doing is I'm thinking, oh, that's interesting. I wonder what else might be going on here. I wonder what else might be the case. I wonder if they've got a value that they're holding tightly, which means they're projecting this onto their staff, or, you know, just, I wonder. It's a very, oh, that's interesting. I wonder what else. With a piece of work that Catherine and I went to today, I first spoke to him, to the guy who's commissioning it yesterday, and I'm listening to him. His issue is that he has a team where there's some contempt within it, and it's very, very important to him in his organization that nobody treats anybody with contempt. So one of the things I'm listening for is, how does he speak about them? Because if he speaks about them with contempt, then I know he's part of the problem, that what he'd like to have happen, he's not an example of. And so it helps, the part of that clean scoping at the very, very beginning helps me code what their position in all of this is, and do I need to work on them before I can work on anybody else? Or are they congruent with what they'd said that they'd like to have happen, in which case I can take my attention off them somewhat and put it straight to their team.
Okay, so it's, so sometimes there's an element of, yes, Mr. Bossman, actually, we need to have a little chat about you first before
Absolutely.
We go and talk to them.
And that happens regularly. So regularly, I'll listen very carefully. I'll go and do a little bit of scoping with the wider team, and then I'll come back to the commissioner, the boss, and say, okay, I'll tell you what I'm noticing. They're doing this. You say you'd like X, Y, and Z, but actually you're doing A, B, and C. And here's my evidence for it. And at the moment, you're not an example of what you'd like your staff to do. And therefore, let's go and work on that first. Work out what, how do you change your attitude or your behavior. And then what we learn from that, that first iteration, will help us shape the way we work with your team.
And is that an example of initial scoping?
That's initial scoping, yes.
And is there any other examples of, like from our session today?
So one of the other things I'll be scoping for in the very initial scoping is the sort of, do you want me to parachute in and parachute out? It makes it less likely that I'll move things around in my schedule to do it. But one of the things that he said was, and by the way, I think that this will be an investment in my training, and I don't know what to do next with this team. And so if we come in and learn this, then I'm hoping that then I'll have those skills and be able to use them in the rest of my work. And I go, tick. Sustainability, tick. Congruence, tick. Lack of drama, tick. Humility. So at some point he said, do you know, sometimes I've made interventions, and I said, I don't really know what I'm doing, and sometimes I think I might have made it worse. You go, tick. So those are all my boxes for, is this a client who can take on systemic modelling in a sustainable way?
Are they your personal list of things that you, Caitlin, want to have in your life because that's the work you want to do? Or is it requirements for systemic modelling success?
It's requirements for systemic modelling success, which, well, both. Otherwise, it's like I've created a model that does match my values.
Well, yeah, but other people could say, take the systemic modelling skill set and maybe go and work with people who didn't tick all the boxes in a certain way.
Yes. Yes. So it's not that I couldn't work with somebody who doesn't tick all the boxes, but that was all the boxes for. Not only can you, are you somebody I'd want to work with, but you're actually somebody who might take this on and keep it. Okay. So it's a sustainable client rather than a parachute in and parachute out. Not everyone has to do all of it. And for example, I might find that they're very incongruent, but then when I give them that feedback and they go, oh my goodness, yeah, I'm incongruent. That's interesting. I wonder why that is. You go, able to take on feedback. That ticks a different box. So it's, there's lots of ways out of it. You know, it's not a stick to beat people with. It's a coaching template to see where I need to pay attention.
Anything that needs to happen before you even have an initial scoping session?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No. Anyone can have one of them.
And then what happens? So you have your...
So then you've got to make a decision. So by asking them a few questions, you know you've got a very... I don't know what the... Simon, there must be a word for it. Do you know, in the network, I've only got one data point.
You've got one node.
I've got one node.
Yeah.
So I know I don't have a system data yet.
Yeah.
So I've got to make a decision based on a very slim line. So one of the decisions was, do I talk to the whole team at once or do I talk to the chief of the head of the team at once? You've got to be careful because this has happened lots of times before. If you go in hierarchical order and one of the people in that hierarchy is someone that other people are against, then you come in behind them. And you'll set yourself up to fail against. It's very important when you're doing the clean scoping that you're seen as an advocate for each person in that team. So deciding who you speak to first can have a big impact.
And how do you navigate who to speak to first?
I mean, in this situation, I think it's about trying to anticipate who would you put in drama more. If you immediately spoke to the group and not to the head of the group, that would be more damage than if you just speak to the head of the group first and then speak to the whole group. I decided to do it that way around. But to be honest, you don't really know. It's a bit of a chance.
But you're also sending a signal. Who goes first tells the rest of the group what's important.
Yes. And if the conflict, let's just say, which it certainly has been in lots of times before, there was a one that we did up in Scotland where the person in charge of the group was the major problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a bit of a heads up about that. And so my choice was not to scope the project with them.
Mm-hmm.
My choice was to immediately go to team level because of my initial scoping. In this case, that wasn't the case. So it was polite. It was etiquette to go to the head of the team and tell them first and put them in a heads up position about what we were going to do with their wider team. I think it would have been, it would have undermined them if I hadn't. So then today we went to see the head of the team. Lovely little things. We thought we only had 15 minutes. And so before we went in, we planned what questions we're going to ask. I was hoping that we were going to have half an hour, so I'd planned half an hour's worth of questions. But when we arrived, they said, oh, no, we've just got 15 minutes. I was like, okay. So what I'm doing in my head is I'm narrowing the questions. And then what we do is we go, I just sort of say, well, right now it's a bit like what? Right now the team's a bit like what? And immediately again, we're coding. They said, oh, it's a great team, great group. And you're like, okay. So you start, okay, coding, appreciation. What kind of great? So creating appreciation, coding, inference. So what kind of great? What lets you know that they're a great team? Oh, you know, they get on with what they've got to do. You don't have to tell them anything. Okay, great. And so what's working really well about them? Go through a bit of that. What's not working so well? Then you get a little bit of the drama, the issue. But again, what I'm listening for is, how does this person hold the group? How are they responding to it? Are they able to separate evidence from inference? If it might take me 3 or 4 goes to try and get them to do that. If they can't do it, I go, okay, that sort of goes over to one side. And I go, that's something that we'll need to work on. So it's not just coding, but it's as I ask the different things, what do I put over there?
So you're doing a whole bunch of stuff in this discovery meeting that I haven't heard you talk about before, in terms of you are deploying what could very well be a set of well-worn, you know, fairly standard questions to get the lay of the land and the lay of that person.
Yep, the lay of the land, the lay of that person, the aspirations, the way they hold the problem, the way they hold themselves, what they think's possible. You know, I say, okay, so just imagine that I was able to wave a wand and, you know, the miracle question and everything else, it just disappears. I'm listening for, do they think that's possible? I do think you need to learn coding before you can do the next bit. So you need to be, I'm not listening to everything that person says.
Yeah, coding's reducing the complexity for you.
Hugely.
But it's the model you're using. You're coding to a model, and I'm not sure I've heard that model before.
I don't think that it's very different from what I'm coding when I'm with the whole group. It's because I'm just coding for information. I'm not necessarily at this point coding for action. So because I've coded for inference, I'll ask for evidence, but I'm not trying to change their behavior. I'm not trying to teach them particularly. I'm just...
But you are looking for stuff.
Yeah. I'm looking for, if it's a problem, is it drama? Where are they in the drama triangle? If it's an outcome, is it desired outcome or is it something that they want to do that they are doing something about? If it's, what's their brain state? So the coding that we did today, I thought was very much outcome, positive, hopeful, mammalian to neocortical brain state for the work and...
Relationship with self was a bit different, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, and struggling a little bit with, you know, motivation to work. It was clear that the relationships in the workplace were taking their toll. And, you know, I'm also coding for, do they want something good to happen? And they clearly do. They really want everything to work out.
And how would you code for this person's part of the problem? Or this person might need some personal work before we go any further?
Yeah, so I code the patterns of the person and then I just put them somewhere and go, we'll need to keep an eye on that.
And today we met the manager, and then we met the team quite soon after. And you set the scene about you and what you do and the work. So it was like a light touch introduction to, because it was, again, it was quite a constrained piece of time.
Yes.
That team.
And it's quite, I think I was saying before when we were doing the planning for it, I was saying that when you're working one-to-one, I'm very much information gathering. I say as little as I have to get the information out of them. But working in the team, I can't, you do have to do some credibility building. You do need to, you understand that this has been going on a while and the team needs to be clear that actually you're capable of doing something about it. Because you've probably got about a minute and a half to win them over. And if you take longer than that, they'll go, yeah, you'll come in and no good will come of this.
That's interesting. The same thing happened to me yesterday in the sales call we had, in that normally I would hang back and ask questions and ask questions, but one or two questions in, it was fairly clear that I was going to need to give them some expertise. They were slightly off track and they were never going to be able to get what they wanted. So I did pack in 5 minutes of expertise stuff, which I wouldn't normally put in there, to then give me the credibility to.
Yes, so I did a similar thing this afternoon.
What you do in scoping, a lot of people would call sales and project scoping or project management. And so at one level, I'm seeing a lot of resonance from stuff that I would see in very conventional fields. But what's interesting for me is project failures don't happen when the failure happens. They happen 6 steps ahead of time when you didn't set expectations properly. So what we're seeing when we're talking about scoping is, yes, we're hearing you using clean language to do the back end of the sales process and lay the groundwork for a successful engagement. But that list of rules you've got, which you've spoken a little bit about, but I don't think we've got the full list yet, that's what's required to be able to go in and go, this is going to be a success.
Yes. You're managing expectations. So Catherine will have heard me say over and over again to people, the truth of it is, I have no idea if we can fix this or not. Yeah. Actually, I've no idea what you want. Do you know, it might be this kind of issue, it might be this kind of issue, or do you know what, it might be unsolvable. So there's that level of expectations, but there's also, there was a lovely example where the commissioner came in and said something like, and you know, it's going to be very important that the team are receptive to change. Because if we're going to make change happen, they have to be receptive to it. And he caught my eye and I caught his eye and he was like, oh, that's not very clean, is it? So, mm-hmm. And then later we were able to talk about how come that wasn't very clean, because it's to do with, it's true for teams to change, they need to be receptive. But to put that out at this stage, it's not the stage to do it. A team will become receptive because you've created the conditions that they are receptive. It is not their job to be receptive because you told them it was time for them to be receptive. Nobody got more receptive by being told it was time for them to be.
Yeah.
You know, it's
like being told to calm down.
Yes, calm down. And so there is something in the clean scoping, which is where you are still, just like clean language with a one-to-one person, you are still, you might start to form your hypotheses, but you keep them to yourself. Or this, yes, you don't put them out there because then that creates resistance. Something in the clean scoping is about not creating resistance in the team early on.
I don't think I've ever heard you mention a hypothesis that you formed in clean scoping. You'll in the room, you'll go, you know, can I tell you what I'm noticing? And you'll bring the evidence that turned up in the room. But I don't think I've ever heard you, refer to anything that came up in...
There'll always be lightly held hypotheses. Yeah. His wasn't a lightly held one.
Okay.
He was so clear that it came out of his mouth. I might have a few, but I put them to one side.
Something I've noticed, having gone on a sales visit with Simon yesterday and with you today, is that something you both do is that you're also scoping the environment in which the meeting is happening. So Simon was taking note of, oh, this is an old building and blah-de-blah-de-blah, and you mentioned that you're also doing that.
Yes, I'm going, oh, yep, this is the way people treat each other. Oh, Okay, this is the way that thing, the murmuring happens in the background. Oh.
Who meets you?
Yeah, who meets you?
What how you do say they, on how the way
speak,
there?
How do they speak to each other? Do they whisper? You know, do they tell you little secrets? Or do they speak with open mouths? Do you know, they, all of those little things I clock.
Who arrives in the room and whether eye rolling when it happens? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, even before that, it's just the environment. Literally the building.
And I was lightly holding it because I know it could be wrong. So then in my case, I went, you know, because we were in a what was a very old building, clearly an old ex-ICI thing that it was almost derelict and become a science park. So either you get companies in there who are looking for the cheapest possible accommodation or small, fast-growth companies. And you have to treat them completely differently. So it's like, okay, we're here. What does this mean?
I wonder which kind of thing this is.
Yeah. So your first couple of questions, you know, just along the way, oh, how long you've been here? It's, you know, nice building.
So that's would be the same as my hypothesis holding. Yeah. They're more sort of like a path, you know, do we go this way? Do we go that way? Is it this kind of thing? Or is it that kind of thing? So with the team we saw, so when we saw the team, you're not asking questions to gather lots of information. You've got a couple of minutes to make your pitch. And so what I'm doing there is, this is me, this is what I do, this is a little bit of the background. But in your pitch, I'm also keeping in mind everything I've heard from my initial conversation and the scoping I've just done with the chief. And this is the thing that we were talking about, imposition. So I don't go the opposite of non-imposition. The imposition would be, and you know, everything that you say, of course it's confidential because some of you are going to want to say some things to me that you're not going to want to say to each other. That would be what I'd call imposition. It's where you take an idea and you impose it on them. In the cleaner way of doing that here, which is where you give them more space, is where you go, do you know, during these interviews, there's going to be absolute confidentiality. And that's because, do you know what? Sometimes people want to say something and they say it to you, but then when they read it, they go, oh, do you know what? I don't want that. I don't want my colleagues knowing I think that. And so you just take it out. I'll know it, but it'll be taken out. And if, for example, because we had a senior manager in the room, I said, for example, if I said the reason I don't want to work with a senior manager is because he's got dreadful BO, I might want to tell you that as an interviewer, but I don't want him to know that I said that. That's private. I mean, it's a joke and I'm being funny, but it's what I'm doing is I'm ticking off their potential need to know how this is going to be, but I'm not imposing my labels on their needs.
So in systemic modeling trainings, we start out with what would you like to know before we begin. Mm-hmm. You can't do that because of time constraints and also, I guess, permission. It's not a training course, mm-hmm. but you have, again, a set in your head of things which people will mostly have in their mind. And as part of your initial conversation, you're making sure you've given them enough evidence to tick it off.
Yep. Absolutely.
And anything else about any of that we're talking about?
Having just done this little exercise, and it's been so interesting having Catherine around and knowing that the commissioning leader wants to learn it as we go along, we thought it might be quite fun to make this into a little training group, is to create a little maybe 5 or 6 person training group and formally teach clean scoping because it's around, it is in the training, but we don't formally teach it. And actually, it's quite a skill.
Yeah, it's a thing of its own.
It is a thing of its own. And I think you could learn it without learning systemic modelling. You have to understand, I don't know, maybe you can or you can't, but I think it's a thing you can do without doing systemic modelling. And I think some people might never want to facilitate a group, but they could be really good, strong scopers before a project.
It's the crossover between clean sales and clean, you know, and systemic modelling, essentially.
Yeah, or where clean interviewing, systemic modelling and clean sales meet.
Yeah. I mean, if you had a production line, you know, you would have a bunch of sales guys going out and doing it, and they would probably do clean scoping and then hand it off to trainers to go and do the specific days.
Yeah. Although I do tell you what's interesting. As we grew, we being myself and the people learning systemic modelling, I struggle to go in and do systemic modelling when somebody else did the scoping.
I was going to ask somebody else.
I was just wondering about that.
And that's because, now I don't know if that's true for everyone, and I think you could do this to scale. you couldn't do it. But it's for me, when I do the clean scoping, I guess lots of it's been unconscious, but I do a lot of parking and noting, and that parking and noting of patterns and of the codes that come back to me is how I shape my intervention. And it's what gives me the credibility when I've got the group in front of me.
Yeah.
I can refer to all of the shared open language, and I can feedback patterns really well like that.
Yeah, because it's not only you, it's what's going on for the client.
Yeah.
And I think you're gaining credibility in the client, which nobody else will have.
Yes.
And
when somebody else has done the scoping and then given me the interviews,
yeah,
I look at it and I go, oh, that's...
But it's very typical. If we lose a sales guy or salesperson, we will lose almost all those deals because for whatever reason, they didn't document it well enough, so we didn't know what the issues were. Maybe it was just unconscious. Maybe we didn't have the credibility of the client, but you can kiss goodbye to the entire pipe.
There's the relationship as well. So what I saw very clearly today is that you were doing it. You were doing systemic modelling, because I said, when you're talking about training as a thing, is that training or is that systemic modelling? You said, no, that's systemic modelling as training. And you were also being and doing, you were systemic modelling personified.
Yes, I know you said afterwards, you said you accepted all that information without any joining in, without any celebration, any, it's a very, very neutral process. But they become, it's clear that to them that they're being listened to and accepted and extended. But for me, there's no, just like when you're doing a group, you're very neutral. Mm.
So it seems that it's just whenever you meet someone because you've got systemic modelling and people are meeting you as Caitlin Walker, it doesn't change. Every interaction you have will have that flavour and approach and
every interaction at work. I think we discussed last time, are you doing this all the time? It's like only at work.
Yeah, it's only
at work. And your professional engagement.
But in any professional engagement, it's like, this is the way we do things around here.
Clean scoping is a big part of a successful systemic modelling engagement. It's a different skill set.
You know, it is a different skill set. And just because I'm doing all of these things all of these different things simultaneously, and I'm unconsciously competent at it. I remember Jacqueline Ansarin read my book and looked at the chapter on clean scoping and went, right, I'll go and do that. And she just did it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's loads of those things I'm talking about, all of the coding and stuff. She wasn't doing that because she didn't know what it was and she hadn't had the training yet. She just followed what was in the book and did it, and she did it really well. So a little bit like systemic modelling, you can just do a clean setup. You can just do clean feedback. All of those things are building blocks. You can still build stuff and you'll be fine and they'll be nice and safe. Of course, when you learn how to build that and this and the other, that's a different level. And when you can not only build them, but then teach the group to build them themselves, that's another level. But you don't have to be able to be like that in order to be successful on your journey.
Probably in the scoping thing, you're doing a lot of things which you know will make your life easier for the next 6 months working with that
client. And I know if I don't say this now.
Yeah.
So for example, if I say I'm going to interview you all and then create a shared model of what you say, they'll go, well, I'm not going to tell you anything then. Well, who's going to see it? Are the management going to see it? So you might as well just say straight off, it'll be completely confidential to you and I. In fact, you know what? Even though he's here, he's not even going to get a chance to see it. Because do you know what? I don't want anyone who's in my interviews thinking, oh, I wonder what the management are going to think of this. I just want you to tell me what it's like from your perspective. And that sort of talking obliquely, not saying you, but, you know, a person in my interviewing, gives them the space to decide whether or not that applies to them. But if I don't say that, at least a bunch of them will then go away and go, well, I'm not going to tell them anything. Because you haven't covered that safety point.
Yeah. So one thing I'm interested in, this was all done a little bit ad hoc, and I think dropped Catherine off to go and play with Caitlin on about 15 minutes notice you had with each other. So I'm just interested what it was like for both of you, because I don't think you've worked together before. So what was that like?
I didn't do anything. I just listened and took notes.
I think it's very clear that you've got to say what your relationship is. So there's nowhere on earth I could do what I was doing and take care of Catherine. Mm-hmm. So I said to her, I'd like you to come in. So I had to give her a very clear, Ross, I'd like you to come in, keep notes for the process in order to learn about it, but don't get involved. You can watch and learn. You can ask some questions afterwards, but please don't get involved.
Yeah.
What was that? I don't know what that was, how that was for you.
Yeah, it was really clear what I was doing. I did not feel it's not my gig. Why would I get in? You know, being there was a privilege, but it's not my gig. They're not my group.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be working with them. It was just, there was no logic whatsoever for me to have any involvement in any of that process.
So watch this space. I think we'll put together this into a little training format. And then when we know more, we'll do another podcast, maybe in 6 to 9 months. We'll go, oh, well, that stuff we said then. Actually, the really important bit is this that we haven't told you about yet.
Caitlin, thank you so very much for your time.
You're welcome. It's been really, both today and this, the last coding podcast and this one, really interesting because, of course, we're at the edge of what I know how to teach. I know how to do it, but I don't know how to teach it. So it's really interesting for me too.
Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.